Hello and welcome to Inside Business with Ciarán Hancock, a podcast from the Irish Times. This week I'll be putting the state's finances under the microscope with Cliff Taylor of the Irish Times, following the publication of first quarter exchequer returns on Tuesday. And later in the show I'll be talking to our resident aviation expert Barry O'Halloran about Ryanair's traffic numbers for March and the outlook for air travel for the rest of this year. But I'll start with the state's first quarter exchequer returns. For this part of the show, I was joined by Cliff Taylor of the Irish Times. Now, Cliff Taylor, welcome back to Inside Business. We had exchequer figures yesterday for the first quarter of this year. Some interesting numbers in there. There was a 4.2 billion euro deficit, which we shouldn't be surprised about, given the current lockdown restrictions. But tax receipts were actually up 1%, and the VAT numbers, very strong, up 8% or 350 million euros, in spite of the fact that non-essential retail right around the country is currently locked down. How do you square that circle?
Yeah, there's a lot bouncing around and a lot going on in those figures. And I think some comparisons with last year, which are messed up by the pandemic starting and by measures that were taken at the start of this pandemic in terms of giving people leeway on paying their taxes. But as you say, remarkably strong overall performance by tax. Even if you look back at 2019 and take all the pandemic factors out of it from last year, taxes in the first quarter this year were a couple of percent higher than the first quarter 2019, with particularly strong growth in income tax up 18% and corporation tax up 11%. Now, I guess the caveat there is if you look back the 2 years, VAT is down 10%. So there is some difficulty with the year-on-year comparison, and that possibly is a better way to look at it. And not surprising, as you say, given that half the retail sector is closed at this stage. That said, you would have expected, I think, that VAT could be down a bit more at this stage. And the Minister for Finance, Pascal Donoghue, made the point that consumers are starting to adapt. They're getting more used to buying online, and that is supporting revenues to some extent. So all in all, a reasonable set of figures. I think if you look at the other side of the ledger, the spending side, you see spending up a whopping 14% and by more, by over 20% on the same period in 2019. Massive additional spending in social welfare, as we know, on the pandemic unemployment payment, also on wage subsidies, also on supports. So there is a huge wedge of extra money that's gone into the economy to try to deal with the pandemic. And I think one of the questions now over the next year is what happens when that money starts to be withdrawn. Can the economy restart, or what part of the economy can restart without those supports, and what's the picture going to look like? The two ministers, Michael McGrath and Pascal Donoghue, are killed telling us that there won't be any cliff edge, that the supports won't be withdrawn suddenly. And I'm sure they won't, but withdrawn they will be, you know, over the next year or so. And that is going to be a test for all parts of the economy, I think.
Yeah, you mentioned spending on a rolling basis, 12 months. It was up 18 billion euros. And I'm just wondering, Cliff, how much of that extra spending is now effectively embedded into the system? For example, extra healthcare spending. And how much of it, you know, are we simply going to be able to withdraw or scrub out, if you like? Obviously, the PUP payments, as people go back to work, they'll come off those. So that'll disappear. But a lot of it is embedded as well, isn't it?
Yeah. There's a bit of, I suppose, a third secret of Fatima in terms of that, in terms of the Department of Finance and their estimates. Now, they will be producing their stability programme update over the next couple of weeks, which is going to give some indication of how they expect the deficit to move over the next few years, and will, I suppose, go some way to answering your question of how much of the spending is one-off and how much of it is going to repeat. The best guide we have is looking at the Fiscal Advisory Council from earlier this year. When they looked at the numbers, they reckoned that 5 billion of the additional spending in the budget this year is effectively spending that will repeat, as you say, areas like health, education, some areas of welfare, money that we're going to have to find, you know, some way to pay for in the next few years. And I suppose, you know, that's the first bit of the question in terms of how the exchequer finances are going to look over the next couple of years. The second bit of it is how growth is going to go and what that's going to mean for taxes and for spending. You know, the ministers, we will all hope, I guess, for a strong rebound in the economy as it reopens. You'd have to reckon we're likely to see that, assuming it can be reopened successfully. But we all know the questions. Some sectors will remain subject to restrictions. We just don't know how this is going to go over the next few months. We hope the vaccinations are going to change the picture, and that by summer, the bulk of the economy, if not all of it, will be operating at something that feels a bit more like normality, even though it's, there will be sectors still subject to restrictions. And some sectors, like events and overseas travel, with, I think, big question marks over them over the next year or so.
Yeah, now we did have some forecasts from the IMF yesterday around global growth. They've upgraded their forecast for this year from 5.5 to 6%. And they've suggested that the big advanced economies really are going to see very little impact from COVID because of the vaccine rollout program, the speed of those programs, I guess, particularly in the likes of the UK and the US, but also because of the fiscal supports that have been put behind economies.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that the international indicators have been better in the first few months of this year than people had expected. And the scale in particular of the fiscal expansion planned in the US and being undertaken in the US and planned for the future is very striking. And these are the factors that are leading the IMF to push up their growth forecasts. You know, I guess we need to remember that comes from that follows a kind of a 4% fall in global output last year. So to an extent, it's a bounce back, and we'll be a while getting back to where we were. I do think there's a question mark over that assertion that, there won't be much long-term pain in the major advanced economies. There's been such a hit to kind of specific consumer-faced sectors. It's gone on for so long now. A lot of the SME sectors are going to be struggling, and I think unemployment is going to be significantly higher for a period of time. So I think, let's hope the IMF is right and that the scars aren't too deep, but I think that one still has a way to run, to be honest with you.
I don't know if they were including Ireland in that assessment. Does Ireland qualify as a big advanced economy?
No, I guess it doesn't. But I suppose at the same time, we might be expected to perform, kind of as an industrialized economy along something similar to the bigger economies. I mean, it's been said a lot now, but the extraordinary thing, and this goes back to the tax figures as well, is the split in the Irish economy between the, I suppose, what you might call the multinational dominated sector and the SME sector. I mean, we saw during the financial crisis that basically the whole of the economy was hit. Obviously, some bits like construction were hit a lot harder than others. But we went into a recession where, pretty much everyone was worse off, or most people were worse off. Most sectors suffered, pay was cut or stalled across the board. This time, it's so far anyway, it's really been the consumer-facing sectors that have suffered. And the other sectors, the multinational dominated sectors, haven't just held in. Some of them have actually made ground over the last year, like the pharma sector and the tech sector being the two most obvious examples. Hiring more people, paying the people they have more. And there's no doubt that's been a really significant support for the economy. And, there's no reason why that shouldn't continue over the next couple of years. You might have some concerns about how the fallout from the withdrawal of supports might affect some other sectors, the banking sector, for example, which is going to be grappling with more bad debts. And there could be, something of a spreading, I guess, of the impact of that over the next couple of years. But looking at the multinational, the export dominated sectors, they there's no reason really to think that they aren't set fair for the next couple of years.
Cliff, as you see it at the moment, what's the prospect for the air travel sector in Ireland, particularly as the vaccine rollout program kind of accelerates in the coming months? When do you think it might begin to get back on its feet?
Do you have any easy questions, Kieran? Yeah, I mean, it's a stick your finger in the air to some extent. And we've seen, looking at the UK, which is probably 6 or 7 weeks ahead of us in terms of vaccination, how they've been coming and going on this. There were indications that people were going to be able to travel. Then they drew back on that. Now they seem to be going back to some extent to hoping people might be able to travel a bit with some kind of vaccine passports. I think the variants have really complicated this issue for Ireland. And you would think that the outlook for this summer for people traveling overseas, there would be very much a question mark over that. Is there a possibility that there may be agreement with some other countries that vaccinated people can travel? Some of the European countries, For example, yeah, it is possible. But I think the return of anything that we might think of as normal in terms of air travel is still, you know, is still very, very, very shrouded. And I think you'd still be looking at next year before you would hope for any kind of return to normality. I mean, for example, big questions over tourism from America, which is traditionally one of our biggest markets, and even tourism from the UK. But as people are vaccinated, this could change, and you know, the picture could look significantly better come summer if the variants are kept roughly under some kind of control.
Also a significant week, Cliff, potentially at least in terms of finding an agreement on this issue, thorny issue of global corporate tax. The US Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen on Monday made a speech in Chicago where she called on other countries to support the US's move for a global minimum level of corporation tax to be imposed upon multinationals. And at the IMF meeting, it looks as if France and Germany and possibly the UK have rowed in behind that call, albeit with some conditions attached. And Pascal Donohue did say yesterday at the announcement of the Exchequer figures that change is coming in terms of corporate tax. So how do you see it? How significant a move has it been over the past couple of days, Cliff?
Yeah, I think what's happened has been very significant. So, I mean, first of all, we had Joe Biden saying that he wanted to see a 21% minimum tax rate charged on US companies and the worldwide earnings of US companies. And sure, everyone is saying, you know, that this still has to go through Congress, and it does, and that it can be amended. And, you know, that is probably quite likely. But still, when the most, you know, one of the most powerful economies in the world sets its stall towards a 21% minimum rate for its companies, and our rate is 12.5%, then that is significant. And, you know, there is a prospect of the companies here might have to pay the Irish rate and then, you know, pay a top up rate or whatever in the US if that's the way the thing goes. Now, having said that, it's, I guess, no surprise that the US is also supporting a global minimum tax at these OECD talks. Still a long way to play out in that. There's still a lot of horse trading, and still, I guess, a, you know, significant lack of clarity on what the rate of that tax might be. The original expectation was that it might head to 12.5%, which is around the Irish rate, which is the Irish rate, which would have suited us okay, would have meant some changes for us, but wouldn't have been a big change for Ireland. But if the rate is set at a higher level globally, then Ireland does face, you know, some fundamental questions. One of them is whether to increase our own rate or not. So, for example, if the global rate is set at 15%, it wouldn't seem much point in keeping our rate at 12.5%. Although there still is a long way to play out before that happens. So two things I think in play for Ireland over the coming months, and this is kind of likely to be tied up by the summer, you know, or tied up or fail by the summer, if you like. One is some potential hit to tax revenues by this idea of a digital sales tax, companies paying tax in markets where they sell products. So big multinationals based in Ireland selling to France, Germany, the UK would pay some taxes in those markets rather than paying all their European taxes in Ireland. So that's been estimated by the Department of Finance to cost Ireland up to 2 billion euro a year out of 12 billion in corporate taxes. So significant enough hit. But I think the bigger issue is what it means for our model of attracting companies here, how this minimum tax rate thing is going to play out. You know, on the one side, okay, just looking at things as they are now, if we were to increase our corporate tax rate, you know, maybe we might get extra revenue. But on the flip side, if this hits our competitiveness in terms of attracting firms here, then that may reduce the level of activity in Ireland, reduce the future investment in Ireland, in some sectors anyway. So it's very complicated to see where the balance might be. But I think there are certainly dangers here for the Irish model and some tricky questions potentially for us over the next few months.
I think it's fair to say, Cliff, that the Trump administration didn't really engage fully with the OECD on this issue around global taxation. They certainly weren't wedded to the idea of US multinationals being taxed by the likes of France or Germany or wherever in terms of their digital sales. And we, I guess the narrative in the election was that a Biden administration would be good for Ireland. And yet here we have very early in the Biden administration's lifetime, we have a very decisive move on global corporation tax, which could undermine the Irish sacred cow of 12.5% corporate tax rate. So in the fullness of time, might we look back, do you think, on Joe Biden being elected as president as actually a bad thing for Ireland? He doesn't seem to be wearing a green jersey at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I think anyone who read his campaign literature, you know, would not be entirely surprised by what happened, even if the 21% rate or the height of the 21% rate maybe came as a bit of surprise. But, you know, I guess we thought that the America First message, you know, was basically a Trump message and bringing investment back home and all the talk we heard from him about it. But I think it's more than that. It reflects kind of a deeper mood in America. And just as Donald Trump did, Joe Biden is playing into the politics of this, that there's a large American working and middle class who haven't done particularly well over the last few years and, you know, who are looking for change. And he's this massive investment program that he's come forward with, and he needs to find a way to help pay for it. And hitting large companies is seen as a popular way to do it. And if you can dress that up to some extent or make that to some extent an attack on tax havens, an attack on companies avoiding tax by using these clever structures, then, you know, all the better from a political point of view. So I think the mood music has really changed fundamentally, as you say, over the last few months since Biden came in. His campaign literature was very strong in terms of attracting investment back to Ireland, back to the US in sectors like pharma, which would be a particular strength for Ireland. And I think, you know, there is an issue there in terms of the amount of high value pharma products that are manufactured in Ireland and sent back to the US market. So most of the big multinationals in Ireland would be serving European markets. But I think there's particular sensitivity and perhaps exposure in the ones that are serving back to the US market. So, yeah, I think the game is going to, it looks like the game is going to change over the next few years. It looks like the US will push ahead with this global minimum tax. Will it be 21%? I don't know. There is some opposition in Congress. Some concerns in Congress about the impact on business and jobs. So we'll just have to see the way that plays out. But I think the direction of travel is very clear, and that is higher taxes on business and a really significant clampdown on the use of aggressive tax structures. And I think that is, you know, it is something that is going to affect the investment picture here fundamentally over coming years.
Cliff, finally, let's just go back to the Irish economy and talk about the reopening plans. You're somebody who has your ear pressed to the door of the Department of Finance. What do you think, how do you see this rollout working? When do you think, for example, the hospitality industry is going to be allowed to open up again? When do you think wet pubs might be allowed? When do you think we might see spectators at outdoor events again?
Yeah, it's slow, not even slow, quick, slow. It's slow at the moment, I think. Look, I think we'll, assuming the figures stay roughly where they are, and you know, who knows on that, might we see the retail sector reopen over the next, you know, during May? I think that has to happen. That's likely to happen, particularly in the context of people being allowed to travel a further distance from their home. Maybe there'll be some phasing in via click and collect or whatever, but, you know, it's, unless things go off track, it's, you would expect the retail sector to be back in action in May. I think the really tricky one is the one you've put your finger on there, which is the hospitality sector and the different bits of that sector. If you looked at what happened in the UK, they opened up self-catering accommodation first, for example, and outdoor dining, and then they're going through a process like that. Maybe something similar will happen here. But the real marker, I think, is the end of June. And can the hotels and the holiday sector be gotten open by the end of June in the context of people being allowed to travel across the country? Because if that can't happen, I think the summer season is effectively gone. Now, if you look at where the vaccination campaign will be by then, you know, we should be heading up towards the kind of levels that have allowed Israel, which is the furthest ahead, to open up fairly significantly while having cases falling. So, you know, given a fair wind on the vaccination, you would hope to see the hospitality sector open for July. Wet pubs, I don't know. You would think they're going to come later. And I know the restaurant sector is very worried about when indoor dining will be allowed. And obviously with this more transmissible variant, that is, I guess, one of the more difficult questions the government faces. And that's a hard one to answer. But then you get anomalies. For example, if people are traveling to visit hotels and hotel restaurants are open, then why shouldn't independent restaurants be allowed open? So I think a bit to play out in that one yet. But if the vaccination campaign does roll out as expected and we don't get any really nasty surprise from new variants, well then hopefully for the summer we'll see hospitality open and a reasonable reopening of society, albeit with masks and restrictions and distancing, I think, continuing for some time yet.
Okay, well, let's hope you're right on that one, Cliff. Cliff Taylor of the Irish Times, illuminating as always. Thank you for joining Inside Business. In the next part of the show, I spoke with Barry O'Halloran of the Irish Times about the outlook for air travel this year. I began by asking Barry about Ryanair's passenger numbers for March and how the rest of the year is shaping up for Europe's largest budget airline.
You're listening to the Irish Times.
Now, Barry O'Halloran, welcome to Inside Business. Ryanair had passenger numbers for March out yesterday, and they showed that 500,000 people travelled with the airline during the month. That was down from 5.5 million people a year earlier, which, of course, was the beginning of the pandemic in Europe. So that was a drop of 91%. Barry, a steep drop, obviously, not entirely unexpected. But just wondering what the airline is saying about the future for air travel for the rest of this year.
Yeah, well, Ciarán, they are talking about returning to in and around 80% of capacity by the summer. A number of weeks before they released those passenger figures yesterday, Michael O'Leary said that Ryanair expects to be flying in and around 2,300 flights a week, which they said was about 80% of normal capacity by the summer. Now, they said the summer, they didn't put a precise point, and it isn't as in we will begin flying 80% of capacity on the 1st of June or anything of that nature. So the airline seems relatively optimistic about its prospects for the coming year. And it is also, as of this morning, they've updated passenger predictions as well. And they are looking at, I think, somewhere in the order of 80 million to 120 million passengers for their current financial year, which began at the start of this month. That would be almost, if they hit 120 million, that would be close to four times the total. In fact, it would be more than four times the total for their last financial year, which was just 27.5 million.
Yeah, and obviously a lot of optimism there, but there's a lot of uncertainty, a lot of question marks over that optimism and over those figures, right? Because if you take in Ireland, for example, we're having this debate about hotel quarantine and whether people should be allowed to travel into the country at all, regardless of where they're coming from. If you look at France, they have this new COVID variant, which everybody's worried about, and France is in another lockdown. And across Europe, there are lockdowns of various descriptions. And even in Britain, where the vaccine program is probably at its most advanced in terms of Europe, they're sort of wrestling with when they should encourage people to go back traveling internationally again, because there is this fear that people will bring back a variant of some sort or another with them. So 120 million, I mean, if they hit that number, it'd be extraordinary, wouldn't it?
It would be extraordinary, but the bottom line is they certainly have the capacity to do that, and they're beginning to take on extra aircraft this year. So, and Ryanair has historically been able to move very quickly to ramp up and ramp down operations in various places. So at the practical side, certainly I think it's within Ryanair's capability of getting somewhere close to that 80 to 120 million figure. The one thing they can't control really is the vaccine program and the pace at which national governments, as you've pointed out, are willing to reopen. Even last year, before we had vaccines, Ryanair did at one point manage to get to 60% of capacity during the summer, albeit not for terribly long. So with that in mind, if everything goes according to plan, I could certainly see them hitting 80% of vaccine towards the, or 80% of capacity rather, towards the end of summer. if there is a fair wind, if the Republic and if the EU manage to get a fair wind behind their respective vaccine programs. If not, then yeah, I think it would be a challenge.
Yeah, I'm sure the government would disagree with you, Barry, to say that they don't have a plan in place in terms of the vaccine rollout. But anyway, we'll move on. Do we know where Aer Lingus is at in terms of its plan to reopen and to ramp up capacity?
Well, what Aer Lingus has been saying, and in fact, they've been saying this really since late last year, the beginning of this year, is that they have been selling a summer schedule, and that is in fact the case. But they've been keeping it under review in light of the various lockdowns and the various developments, such as the rather draconian quarantine programs that ourselves and a lot of European countries are operating. Aer Lingus is in a slightly different ballpark to Ryanair as well, in that Aer Lingus's business for the last sort of 5-6 years up to COVID-19 or up to the arrival of COVID-19 was very much focused on growing its transatlantic business, and where that will be, or you know, when that comes back, that's a $6 million question, I think, for the airline. Other than that, it could, like Ryanair, develop a reasonably healthy European business at some point in the sort of second half of this year, should all those vaccine programs around the continent actually get up to speed, and should we get, you know, decent numbers of people vaccinated.
Yeah, Barry, just wondering, where's the rest of the Irish aviation industry at? I mean, in terms of, let's say, our airports, how have they weathered the storm of the pandemic, and how ready are they to ramp up, you know, as things begin to open up again? And also a couple of other Irish airlines or airlines based out of Ireland, like Stobart and CityJet, for example, how are they fixed at the minute?
Well, in terms of the airports, DAA has lost in the region of 2,000 workers are either in the process of taking or will take voluntary redundancy. They have certainly reordered their business. They've cut it to size, or cut it to match what size they think it will be. The picture is very much the same in Shannon. We have at this stage around 3% of normal passenger numbers walking through, you know, passing through our airports. Throughout 2019, the daily average, about 104,000 people pass through Irish airports. That's all Irish airports taken together every day. That figure is now down around 3,000 a day. So in effect, there is really nobody arriving here at all. And there is very little business being done in our airports as a consequence. However, DAA has returned most of its workforce to their full pre-COVID pay as of the end of last month. And they're certainly, well, I wouldn't say optimistic, but certainly they are ready and waiting for when things start they're certainly ready and waiting for when things start to roll back. Yeah, or for when the crisis starts to recede, rather.
Sure. What's Michael O'Leary's view on this whole idea of vaccine passports, which may or may not allow people who've been vaccinated with one or two doses to travel abroad, as opposed to those who haven't been vaccinated?
Well, what Ryanair has said is that they won't stop people who haven't been vaccinated from getting on their planes. In one sense, that's academic, because the vaccine passports are going to be agreed by countries and by the EU overall. So presumably, if someone hasn't been vaccinated and doesn't have a vaccine passport, there isn't much point in them attempting to fly in the first place. So from that point of view, Ryanair or any other airline's kind of view on vaccine passports is a little bit academic, because governments are going to determine how that works.
Yeah, and any sense, Barry, when the air travel industry might get back on its feet? I mean, we've had lots of predictions about how long this might last, the disruption, that, you know, it could be 2 years, 4 years, 5 years, 7 years, etc. What are you hearing from the people in the industry?
I think the basic notion that you're looking at 2024, 2025 for it to have recovered, you know, a full semblance of normality. It may not be quite back to 2019 levels, but it will be getting there. I think that's what most people feel at this stage, and I think those are reasonable predictions. But that really is down to, you know, how fast it begins to recover in the first place, and how fast it begins to get momentum, if you like. And much of that really is down to the speed and efficiency of national and EU vaccine programs.
Okay, Barry O'Halloran, we'll leave it there. Thank you for joining Inside Business.
Okay, that's it for this week from Inside Business. My thanks to Cliff Taylor and Barry O'Halloran. This week's show was produced by Declan Conlon. You can get the latest business news straight into your inbox by signing up to our Business Today email at irishtimes.com. And you can also follow the Irish Times business feed on Twitter, LinkedIn and Facebook each day. I'm Ciarán Hancock. Until next time, take care and stay safe.